Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and women's football expert Ella German and Charlton striker Lily Ag. The Lionesses win again. They march on, they top Group D, but are they really that good?
We can be, but we're only showing glimmers of it at the moment, really. Obviously, on paper, 9 points, 3 wins out of 3 in the group. You look at our squad, we know the potential they have and they've shown it in little glimpses so far. But in every single one of our games, I think around the 60, 70 minute mark, we've looked really tired. And that's a bit of a worry because as we progress through the tournament, we know we're likely to face some of the bigger sides as we get to the quarters and semi-finals. That could be a real problem. But at the same time, Phil Neville made 12 changes between the last two games. So it's really hard to tell where we're at a team at the moment as well.
Yeah, agreed. I think we've done our job, but been a little bit disappointed. I watched the other night and if I'm honest, I was bored watching. I thought we gave the ball away quite a lot. I think we looked, like you said, a bit lazy almost. Lack of movement in the middle. I don't know if that is tiredness or just kind of because he switched the team about and they actually were a bit unsure on how they play together. I thought we looked then, like you said, towards the end, very shaky at the end and it could have got an equaliser. You know, I was nervous. I thought, oh gosh, we're gonna get a draw and Japan should have finished their chances, and I think against the better teams they will. So at the minute, no, we're not that good. I think there's a few bits that need to be done if we are going to win the World Cup, but like you said, so far 3 wins on paper looks fantastic.
For you, Lily, when you're watching at home, is there an element of get me out there?
I always think that. It's easy to watch football though, isn't it? Easy to watch on the telly and easy to watch from the sides. And like you said, when you watch, like, why are you doing that? Pass there, do this, do that. And it's very easy to say. But I'm always there thinking, God, I'd love to be out there. And I know, like I say, there's numerous other players as well that maybe think sometimes they should be out there over others. But that's the squad and that's how it is. And like I said, yeah, they've done well so far, so can't complain.
You both picked up on that wobble that the side had late on against Japan. Around the sort of 60, 70 minute mark, they seemed to forget that they were halfway through a game of football. Where does that come from? Is it as straightforward as fatigue or is there a mental aspect as well?
I'm not sure because like Lily said, the right word is shaky at times. And I'm not sure if England get a bit worried. In a lot of these games, we've only been, you know, 1-0 up in the game against Japan for large swathes of the match. So I don't know if that sort of kicks in and they know how important it was to top that group to get, on paper, easier tie going into the last 16. But we do just look tired as well. I'm not quite sure what it is, probably a mixture of the two.
Yeah, I think for me, I think Millie Bright and Steph Houghton looked like they haven't played together, and on paper they haven't really played together. They looked a bit like they were getting annoyed at each other, sloppy passes, a bit of lack of understanding, whether that's communication, whether, you know, only they kind of know. And I think that, you know, both individually fantastic players, you can't doubt that, but maybe is, you know, McManus back there where she played with Steph, do they maybe have a better understanding? That again is something maybe for Phil Neville to work out. I think in the midfield, I think Stanway was fantastic for me. She looked like a bright spark. She looked fearless. She got the ball. She wanted to shoot. She didn't care where from. And that's exciting. That's what you want to see. You know, as few people were saying, oh, why is she shooting there? But for me, I'm thinking, shoot again. Another one. I thought she was going to score. And like I said, she was the one then that got subbed off. So
she looked knackered, though.
She
I
did
was
look
watching
knackered.
Her walk off. She and did. Fair play to her. As you said, she was brilliant. She worked hard. but I have rarely seen a football player, certainly a professional one, look that tired coming off at around the 70-minute
mark. She'd done a lot of running, I think. She was
she
up
was
and down.
Blowing. She was absolutely gone.
I think fair play to Stanway in a way. Like, that was her chance to maybe, you know, nick that number 10 spot from Frank Kirby, who, you know, hasn't performed as well as Stanway did against Japan. So I think that's probably why she looks so tired. I think she probably think, you know what, this is my chance to impress Neville and maybe get another appearance at the rest of the tournament. And, you know, I completely agree with Lily. She was fantastic. And I think perhaps she does deserve that as well.
That comparison to Kirby is a very interesting one. Is it going to be a case of horses for courses for Neville? Is Kirby going to provide that little bit of magic possibly off the bench?
Potentially, yeah. It's a weird one with Frank Kirby. I'm a massive fan, but over the last 12 months, her moments of magic have been very few and far between. Obviously, she had the injury hit season, so it's not all entirely her fault looking at her statistics on paper. But I'm getting to the point now where I don't know if you can 100% rely on her to turn up in a big game anymore. And like Lily said, we kind of want someone like Stanway who's a bit fearless. And okay, not all those shots came off, but you want someone who's going to at least be making a bit more of an effort. Not that Fran Kirby isn't, but she's not, you know, producing the same goods at the moment.
I think for me, I'm going to have to disagree. Like, I think Fran, for me, regardless of maybe not having her best year so far, she has to start. She is a fantastic player. I think she's very low on confidence. As well, I think it shouldn't be a comparison in terms of should Stanway or Kirby start. For me, if it was my team, I'd find a way to play them both. And that's, you know, I'm not a manager, but that would be what I'd look to do and look to maybe change the shape according. Because for me, Stanway offers something different. And Fran, regardless if she's at 50%, she's still, you know, if she's not scoring, if you've watched the last few games, she has still maybe got an assist and she's still maybe found that one great pass. There's a lot of pressure on her. So I think you can see that in how she's playing, in maybe her confidence, how she walks onto the pitch, even how she displays herself on the pitch. She looks not sad, but she doesn't look like she's enjoying football. And when you want the best out of Fran Kirby, needs to be her picturing herself in the park, having the best time playing football, and you will see that her best side come out. So for me, I think if the pressure goes off, and like I said, there's been a lot of critics on her for that, so that's going to have a massive effect on her. And I think she needs to, you know, I really do want her to score a goal or something to just say to people, look, give me a break, let me score a goal, and then kind of show what she can do. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Pretty much all forwards go through runs in their career where they're not having the fortune in front of goal. Lily, you're an attacking player. How do you build up someone's confidence when they haven't had the best luck?
Exactly that. Luck and confidence go hand in hand. And I think when your confidence is down as a striker, your confidence is down. And when it honestly, you don't want to shoot. You feel nervous and you think too much. And I think when you play football, you shouldn't have to think. It should come naturally. Whether you get the ball, you know, my natural instinct is get the ball, shoot. I might be at the halfway line, I might not even realise, but
my natural instinct is think,
get the ball
and
shoot.
Over.
Hence why I end up being a striker or attacking midfield. And for me, I think if your confidence is low, you lose that. You lose your instinct to touch and shoot, and that's where half the goals come from. If you think about it, you don't get that chance, and the moment goes, it should be in a split second shot. So for me, I think as soon as she gets that back, you will see the best of Fran Kirby.
Ella, do you think Kirby can take Raheem Sterling as a positive example? He didn't have a good World Cup for the men last summer. A lot of us, not least me, were having a right good go at him. Fast forward a year and he is the golden boy of English football. These things do come in waves, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And like Lily said, you can't expect those players to go out and have the best tournament of their lives every single time they compete on the international stage. It's just such a difficult one because I'm the same. I would love to see Fran Kirby play at the best she can, but it's so difficult when perhaps you have a younger player who is brimming with confidence on the bench and, you know, performing well as well. Stanway got the assist for Ellen White's goal, a really well-worked move against Japan, to think, you know, can we afford to wait for her to pick up her confidence at a World Cup? So it's a really tricky scenario for me.
We should talk about Ellen White as well. A really delicate finish for that first goal. How important is she for England?
Yeah, she's massive. I think there was a bit of, I know a lot of people talking about who's going to start before the Japan game, and people said, no, definitely Taylor. Taylor will start. And I said straight away, Ellen White will start. In my head, I knew, because she's a finisher and she works, she gives 110% every single game, and you see that. And she's a player that she's not going to pull out five step overs. She's not going to, you know, but she will be in the right place at the right time to put the ball in the back of the net. And that is ideally what you want from your number nine. So for me, I think, like you said, she's been fantastic so far. A real kind of, not an underdog in that sense, but I don't think people expected Ellen White to do as well as she has. And a lot of people don't rate Ellen White. Lots of people, because she may not technically isn't great, but she doesn't potentially sometimes look like a footballer, her technique and things like that. And lots of people are like, oh, you know, typical fan, oh, she's useless. But she's not. She scored two goals the other night. She scored, you know, she's playing very well. So for me, I think she's a very good player. She's done very well.
Yeah, I think she's one of the best forward we've got available for the World Cup. It's a weird one because there are certain names that get recycled as sort of England's key players. Your Lucy Bronze, your Nikita Paris, your Fran Kirby's, your Steph Hortons. And Ellen White's name doesn't fall into that bracket as often for whatever reason. But absolutely, she works so hard. She's a brilliant finisher and, yeah, an overall great number nine to have in the team.
What I like most about Ellen White is after every goal she scored in this World Cup, her first response has been a look of extreme surprise. It's so charming. She sort of looks at her teammates and goes, oh my God, I did it. And you're like, yes, go on. I like that. I've
always liked
that.
And then she does a weird little celebration.
Yeah, that I'm not a fan of. The hands on the eyes. What is that?
See, I've asked exactly that question. So apparently all it is she wears glasses, specs.
Right.
So she does that to, you know, suggest her glasses. You know, I don't really get it.
Shout
if it's
out to my
fun.
Optician. The contacts are doing the
it's
trick.
It's very interesting. But, you know, I wear glasses. Should I start that one? I don't really see the... lots of people do wear glasses. I find it... But it works. She loves it. People make note of it. So keep doing it, Ellen.
I wear glasses. I don't score any goals. Ellen White, of course, had the privilege of having all her goals stand. The same can't be said for all of the strikes in this competition. VAR is hitting the headlines yet again. Coming up, is it just a waste of time?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Ella German, Women's World Cup expert, and Lily Ag, Charlton striker. And call me old-fashioned, but when a goalkeeper saves a penalty, she saved the penalty. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, it's madness, isn't it? I can't believe what I've seen this last week. You know, from the France game, Nigel, the keeper didn't even save it. The player's missed. Whether the keeper is on her line, off her line, she didn't even save it. So why would it be retaken? It's a missed penalty. It's absolutely baffling. And like you said, a heartache all round for everyone. And I think there was a thing on Twitter for the keeper, I think, of Nigeria. Just head in hands, absolutely gutted. And I felt that for her. It was madness. It was crazy. And then, like you said again, the other night, Scotland, the late drama. And I think there's been, again, on Twitter, you've seen it. And I think Lee Alexander, as the kick is taken, she's on her line. And I call it not centimetres. Her probably big toe is over that line. And it's been retaken. And baffling. How can you do that? But the equivalent is then actually the England 21 men the other night v France. Don't know if anyone, you know, you might have saw it, Johnny, but Henderson, I think, is the goalkeeper for them. He's a good foot plus over the line.
He saves it. But this is a part of making
absolutely
a penalty
nothing.
Save, right? This is the fundamental point. You're on the balls of your feet.
And when they
run up, you do a little jump and then you leap forward. That is what everyone does to save a penalty. And suddenly VAR's going, well, that's a foul.
Exactly. I think it's a bizarre kind of rule in the first place. And like I said, even then, it's clear and obvious. So for the Women's World Cup so far, it's been centimetres. And that the other night was, you know, a good foot and nothing happened. Nothing carried on. So there's no consistency in it. There's, like you said, a heartache within it as well for numerous people. And it's big calls, big decisions. Imagine this happens now in a final. It's going to be absolute outrage. So I'm not a fan at all.
Ella, is consistency the main point? We need to make sure that if we're going to have this technology, it's getting applied in the same way for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are two key things that have really annoyed me here with this rule. I don't particularly like the rule. I'm not a big fan of it, but okay, it's the rule. But the problem is, I think it was introduced something ridiculous like confirmed about a week before the tournament started. So for, you know, in the case of the Scotland goalkeeper, Lee Alexander, she's about 27 years old, I believe. She's been saving penalties a certain way her whole life. Suddenly, you're in that position in the last minute of a World Cup game and you've got so much on your mind already, knowing that if you don't save it, your team are out of a World Cup. And you know, you might not have time to think about how differently you need to approach this penalty. The second reason it's really annoyed me is because if you compare it to other decisions that VAR have not given, for example, in USA Sweden last night, we saw Carly Lloyd interfering in the box.
How is this not offside? I mean, explain the way she was interfering, but watching it at the time, that's just offside.
Yeah, she's just offside. And if she wasn't there offside, the defender wouldn't have played the ball the way she did to land to Tobin Heath. So I don't understand how VAR's being so picky when a goalkeeper's feet, like Lily said, is millimetres, centimetres off the line. But then a player is clearly offside interfering with play and it's not given. I don't understand.
That goal for the USA seemed to be a fundamental misunderstanding of the rules of football. Because if a defender hits a clearance because there's a striker offside interfering with play, as you say, what is the refereeing of a lower quality in this tournament generally than you expected?
For me, yeah. And like you said, it just doesn't make sense. For example, if VAR is there and it's got the screens to go back and make the correct decision. So, for example, the Lee Alexander case on the penalty, even when you save it and go back and you watch, she's clearly on the line still. So actually, VAR, your job is to go back to the... Can't they, you know, go back again to the screen, put it down and say, oh, actually, bad decision, you are on the line. That penalty now doesn't count. Or, you know, how does it work? Because, again, that's the point of it. You need to... It's there to get the correct decision and it's still not getting the correct decision. So what do you do? How do you go about it?
Given that this is taking place in the Women's World Cup, it's got nothing to do with the quality of the footballers, but is it just giving sexists more ammunition to say even the refs are rubbish?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, we've discussed this. There's always going to be those sexists that pipe up no matter what. But in a way, you could look at it in a with a positive outlook in that it's got so many more people talking about the women's game. Okay, I'm not saying, okay, yeah, VAR keep acting like this. Not at all. I want it to be resolved and get the right decisions. But on the plus side, it's brought more coverage to the women's game, which hopefully in the long run will be a plus.
What I found really, really frustrating about that Scotland retake is she's so worried about being on the line that she's actually, when the retake's taken, she's about a foot behind it. Do you see? She jumps backwards. You think, you cannot be at a point. That it's kicked straight at her and she still can't save it because you can see she's so concerned about her body positioning, which, as you were saying, is instinctive from the age of four, that, yeah, it's just farcical. It's so, so frustrating. What's the solution?
It changes everything, doesn't it? But for me, there isn't a solution. I actually saw a tweet the other night suggesting that it's going to be coming into the WSL and actually, you know, equal play and all of this. Bring VAR then to women's football. Yeah. I was thinking, oh, gosh, the rate is going at the minute. That'll be outrageous. That can't happen.
Important to note, there's been a statement released that in the Men's Premier League, they're not going to apply VAR to issues of whether a keeper is on his line for the penalty.
Oh, great,
so we're safe on that particular count. It's still going to be around for offsides and so on. Do you still feel that it's a positive for the game?
I think it's absolutely bonkers that the Women's World Cup is treated as a guinea pig for this, really. I mean, okay.
Well, they've treated other major European leagues in the men's game as a guinea pig as well, to be
fair.
Yeah,
that's true. And that's what we need to stop doing, is stop just changing the rules at last minute, changing the way, you know, players have, you know, acted before when they're saving a penalty, and then changing it mid-tournament as well and saying, oh, the keepers will no longer be booked for doing this. You know, get your rules straight, get your facts straight before it all starts.
It's the only way. It is going to run and run. It is going to run and run. I think in about 4 years' time, we'll still be sitting here complaining about VAR. Tell you what, let's talk about the goals that go in and actually count. Coming up, it's time for Golden Boot Watch.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's time for Golden Boot Watch. We're going to kick this off with an ancient Thai proverb. If a striker scores 5 goals in a game and she doesn't win the golden boot, she's rubbish. Discuss.
I mean, Alex Morgan's put herself obviously in an incredible position to win this golden boot with her performance in that match, albeit, you know, she was maybe granted a slightly more favourable task against Thailand. Just a bit. I think what is really impressive is the fact that 6 goals have been enough to win the Golden Boot at the last 5 or 6 tournaments. And the most goals scored at any World Cup was by a former US player, Abby Wambach, with 10 in 1991. And with Morgan having half of that at the end of the group stage, you think the US are likely to progress, you think maybe, you never know, she could get near that. But, you know, I don't think if she doesn't win it, that means that she herself is rubbish. There's a lot of competition out there for that award.
I'm on the wind up, and even after her scoring those five, unlike me, would I ever? There are people hot on her tail. Sam Kerr has already caught her up, 5 goals. The Australian, of course, the record scorer in both the Australian and American leagues. She was tipped for it. But there are people hot on their tails as well. Christiane of Brazil has 4, Carly Lloyd 3, and our own Ellen White joins Wendy Renard and Cristiano Girelli on 3. Lily, you know a thing or two about scoring goals. Who's going to win it?
I think, like I said, it's going to be stats, really. Whatever team kind of progresses so far, they're going to have more chance, aren't they, to score the goal. So it's going to depend. I think USA kind of favourites to get towards the final. So if they continue that and they do get there, Alex Morgan has a fantastic chance and has set herself up nicely with the 6 goals. Sam Kerr, 4 goals the other night. Fantastic. So she's still in there. But the case for that is, are Australia going to get as far as the USA? Big question. We will have to see. I think Ellen White's done fantastic. You've got Renard up there on every corner. So if France get another 5 corners, for example, next game,
all penalties.
And
if she gets the pens and she gets to take them 6 times.
How is your centre-back penalty taken out? She just does what she wants, doesn't she? There was a comparison the other night, you know, Virgil van Dijk for Holland, saying, you know, centre-backs, now he should take, you know, penalties for things like that as he's their best player.
Virgil van Dijk, by the way, is actually a really, really good set-piece taker.
See what I mean? I can imagine it as well. But, you know, penalties, get ahead on corners. I'd love to have seen the odds on her before the tournament for top goal scorer. She's putting herself in a great position. And like I said, France are favourites to get all the way. So she's got more games to get more goals. So it'll be interesting.
Is it wrong of me to be absolutely desperate to see a centre-half win the Golden Boot?
How amazing would that
brilliant.
Be?
It would make me
unbelievable.
So happy.
Especially if she beats Alex Morgan. Like, you've got 5-1 game. That'd be incredible.
I'm going to laugh. It's going to end up being, imagine, France-USA in the final. Every free kick or whatever. It can't be France-USA in the final, can it? I've made that up, but imagine in your heads, imagine, and it could be France, Renard on the corners, on the everything, free kicks, running up,
taking,
wants the goals.
If she's level on goals with Morgan by the semi-final, you start her up front.
You'd let her.
You'd let her go anywhere. You would. She's 6'2". You start her up front, you go long ball, and you see what happens.
Goals are all that matters.
Goals are all that matters. She knows a thing or two about scoring them at domestic level. Since 2006 with Lyon, she's got 63 in 177. Has there ever been a centre-half in the women's game with a goal record like that?
I'd be very surprised if there was. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
It's fantastic. I don't, like you said, stats. I think she has a great advantage, though, the fact that she is, I don't know her actual height.
6'2".
Great height. Fantastic height. You know, the average woman that she's playing against in France, even if you're marking her, even if you've got a great leap, she's going to be a foot above you getting that header in the corner.
What's the tallest centre-half you've faced, Lily? What's the sort of average height?
Gosh, that's a great question.
Do you normally find yourself being smaller than the people you're challenging in the air with?
I like to think, Johnny, on a good day, I'm a strong 5'7". I often...
And what about a bad day?
Probably 5'5", you know. I like to add a couple inches in there. It depends on the day, how I'm feeling. I'd love to be 5'8". I think that's a great height. Maybe 5'9", pushing it for a football.
It makes such a difference in women's football, doesn't it? Because watching England, Japan the other night, every time we get a set piece, straight away it's, where's Jill Scott? I get the ball to Jill Scott somewhere in the box. You know, your chances of getting the ball in the back of the net do really step up. So, you know, you can see why France maybe want Renard up there all the time.
Can I just say, as a testament to the aerial ability of these women, speaking as someone who is obscenely tall, does not mean you're good in the air. My very, very limited football career has been completely blighted by getting sent up for every single set piece and being expected to head it, which I am just rubbish at. I back Renard. I back her every step of the way, doing it for oddly tall people everywhere. In terms of that Golden Boot race, how much of it is going to come down to how long teams stay in it?
All of it, because Sam Kerr, if she played for the US, I would back her to win the award. But she's playing for Australia, who, you know, up next, they have Norway. I don't know. I don't think that they'll get through. I think Norway could top them in that. So they're you know, even though she's an incredibly talented striker, she's the one who has carried Australia into the round of 16 for a start with the four goals in that match. So, yeah, it absolutely depends on that. And I think that's why Alex Morgan has the massive upper hand, is because she's playing for the US.
I think VAR has a massive say as well. If you think how many penalties are going to, you know, how many penalties have been at the minute? If, for example, Renard's taken them, for example, think of England. If Paris hasn't taken them and White's taken them to get her, she should be on five. If she scored, sorry about that. But you see my point. So Sam Kerr takes penalties. I don't actually know who takes penalties for USA. I think they've got
Lloyd missed one, didn't she?
But I think they've got a lot that fancy it. Maybe they decide on the time who's been fouled. But for me, like you said, if Morgan now, she's going to be fighting for that ball to get the golden boot. So I think VAR will have a massive say, depending on how many penalties and set pieces get put in.
Quite a potent one. It sounds to me like Wendy Renard is nailed on for the golden boot.
Favourite. Chuck your money on. Heard it here first.
Wendy Renard, all 6'2" of her, is going to win the golden boot from the heart of the French centre back. Now, coming up, the round of 16. Are there any obvious easy games in there, and how are England going to get on?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Women's World Cup show, and we're casting our eyes forward to the round of 16. Lily Ag and Ella German are here with me. Which fixtures leap out at you?
I think for me, I'm really looking forward to France against Brazil. Obviously, France, the host, a lot of pressure behind them, always exciting. But Brazil, they've been involved in a few great games this season. And it would be lovely, especially from an England point of view, if France or the USA, who will be likely to face at one point, don't get through. But I think that could be a really exciting game. Another one I can't call at all is Sweden against Canada. I think the two really strong sides. I can't see who's going to come out on top in that one. And perhaps the same goes for Norway, Australia. I just mentioned just then that I think Norway could tip it. But, you know, we saw Australia come back from behind to beat Brazil this week. So, yeah, there's a good few matchups in there.
If Norway had Ada Hegerberg at their disposal, would they be one of the favourites?
I don't think they'd be one of the favourites because, again, I think to win a World Cup, you need a strong team from your goalkeeper right up to your striker. I think you can't just rely on one player to deliver the goods. But it could have provided them the edge maybe to go a bit further than they might will. But again, it hasn't happened yet, so we'll wait and see how they do.
Yeah, agreed. I think, like you said, to score the goals, for example, with Hegerberg, she, with all respect, in Lyon, you know, she gets probably 30 chances a game.
And she still can't outscore Renard, by the way. But,
you know, she's getting a lot of chances. With Norway, is she going to get as many chances? And playing again against tougher opposition, for example, in France, yeah, PSG are very good, but the rest of the league isn't as strong, which is why she does score, in my opinion, so many goals. Would she score that many maybe in the WSL or in another league? That's maybe like something she'll look at later on in her career. But in terms of the World Cup, I don't, like I said, it wouldn't make them favourites because you do need a strong team. But it'd be very interesting to see how far they would have gone.
That's a really interesting point, actually, to flag up someone with a really good goal scoring record and the strength of the league, because you could say the same for the likes of Miedemar. You know, if there wasn't such a gulf in the WSL, would she have got 22 goals this season? So it's quite hard to... Okay, Miedemar's, you know, doing well at the World Cup so far, but it's quite hard to judge how they might perform against the very best on the international stage.
Looking at these fixtures, are there any people who've got perhaps an easy draw?
On paper, yes, but it's the knockouts now. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you look at tomorrow's game, Germany against Nigeria, and think, oh, Germany, two-time World Cup winners, they should have that one in the bag. But Nigeria only lost to France 1-0, so it's quite hard to call what's going to happen. Again, England versus Cameroon, you'd like to think with the experience and history we have compared to them that we have the upper hand. But again, this is the knockouts. There's no room for complacency for anyone.
Exactly that. It's the last 16. It's going to be nervous times for both teams, and pressure gets to some people, and there's going to be mistakes, there's going to be cagey moments, there's going to be some fantastic goals, there's going to be some errors, and that is the joy of football. So I don't think you can say that any game's going to be easy, anyone's going to walk over anyone. And like you said, I'm excited. I think, for example, France-Brazil game, everyone's going to expect loads of goals. You'd think how it's been so far, but actually I think it's going to be cagey. I think it'll end up, you know, but But that's going to be, I think, most games. I think when you said earlier, Germany, Nigeria, you think, oh, straight away Germany. Then actually, if you think about it, Nigeria have been very good. They've been solid. They've got, like you said, Ashwala up front. They've got a really good squad. And again, physical battle, you know, Germany might not shy away. But again, it's going to be down to a lot of factors. And I think that's going to be the case of a lot of those fixtures.
It's so hard to call looking at the group stage as an example. We all looked at that group, England's group, Group D, and said, oh, Argentina, that's the easy game. And that's the game that arguably we found pretty tough and scored the least goals in. So you never know how the game's going to pan out.
Might Spain and the goal-scoring talent of Jenny Hermoso perhaps cause USA a problem?
I'd like to hope so. I think, again, Spain's got a fantastic team. They've got their league has grown massive. They've got great backing over there in terms of the league. I think Atletico Madrid and Barcelona, when they played each other this year, I can't remember the stat, but something 50, sellout,
40, 50.
Something crazy, sellout stadium, and they and Atletico, I think I'm correct in saying they won the league again, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They beat Barca again, so they've got fantastic depth out there, and that league has become, you know, better and better. Like I said, it's attracted players like Tony Duggan to go out there, and she said what a great league it is. So there's some real talent in Spain, and I think we've had before, I think at Arsenal, Corredera and players like that that played here and actually said that they missed the Spanish league and thought the Spanish league was better. So, you know, there's great players in there, and actually they might surprise, you know, USA with how they play.
We gave the goalkeepers in this tournament quite a hard time last week. We were talking about...
like women's goalkeepers to be slated, isn't it?
Women's goalkeepers, I might have said the height 5'4" a few times. We might have suggested the goal should string. And since we've done that, there have been some really, really exceptional saves made.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic performances. Obviously, Correa for Argentina against England was brilliant. We had Christiana Endler for Chile against the USA. Okay, that was another big loss for them, but it could have been a lot worse, you know, I hate to say it, but Thailand level, if she wasn't between the sticks for them. But also, I think we look at Karen Bardsley against Japan when, I think it's from the free kick early on, when one of the Japan players sent a shot flying for the top corner, and she leapt for that and kept it out of the goal, which just proves, you know what, if the right coaching is there, female goalkeepers definitely have, you know, the ability to perform, and, you know, it sort of has shut down this smaller goals debate to an extent.
Why is, and Lily, you alluded to this, why is there such a stereotype around women's goalkeepers getting being so bad? Because they're not that bad, but every time it comes up, I was talking to a taxi driver the other day, and he brought up the Women's World Cup, and he said, you know what, I've been really surprised by the standard, but the goalkeeping's awful. Why do people hold this view?
It is difficult. I do, you know, I agree to a degree, because the point of it is, I often sometimes say it's very difficult to find a good women's goalkeeper, and it is. And I think, you know, even for me the other night, and with all respect, I was slating Karen Bardsley's kicking in my head, because actually I wasn't impressed with it at all. And I thought, as a goalkeeper, you know, she, not just maybe the distance for me, but her accuracy, I don't think she, you know, she didn't really find many England players. If you, I don't know, people, I was picking up on that. And obviously once you spot one, you notice every little one. And I was going, it's not even getting towards the halfway. And I'm thinking, come on, Karen, what's going on here? So, and that's coming from someone who loves women's football and supports it. So it's very easy. But again, I say that sometimes when you watch the men's game, like, it depends on the person. So then the alternate of that was, for example, the free kick. So Kumi took it. Yokoyama, I played with her actually at FFC Frankfurt. So before she took it, I was saying, she's got a strike on her. I can see this being...
Were you that person in the room?
Not
like,
a bad
this is,
shot.
This is going in, lads.
I was there going, come on, Kumi, in my head. Come on, you've got this, kind of to a degree, thinking, go on, what are you going to do? And like you said, Karen Bardsley, fantastic save. And there's been a picture, hasn't there? Because it's not even when people say, oh, it was going towards the top corner. It is pinpoint top corner. You can't get any more in the corner than this. And the picture of it is her tipping it around the corner. So like I said, people are then now saying, smaller goals, you know, she doesn't need it, fantastic. But again, mistakes are going to happen. We said it last week, it's always going to happen.
Playing at the highest level, Lily, yeah, have you ever come up against a goalkeeper where you've just been like, you are terrible at football? Have you ever felt that it was just a free scoring field day for you?
Yeah, of course. I think, like, you know, when you play when you're younger as well, and you often, you know when you're playing Sunday league, and when
what's the most you scored in a game? Come on.
God, I think I think I've actually got an article at home. My mum's made a scrapbook throughout my years of football. Cute mother, Ag.
Lily Ag destroys childhood of goalkeeper.
I generally have. I think I'm going to have to look and correct. I think it might have been 14.
14? I've not scored 14 goals in my life.
My surname used to be Vardy, and it's when I was younger, and it's in there saying, I think Vardy scores 14 and a result. It's in the scrapbook. So, you know, but this is when I was younger. And like you said, and the difference is as well, back then, like you said, you'd have some keepers you'd have some keepers, you know, you'd know they're not great when they'd have to maybe then get the centre back or a player to come and help them out of a kick, or and then it was kind of couldn't get out their own half, and sometimes again come down to height. Back in the day, if you're young playing in big goals, if you had a good strike on you as a young player growing up, I would shoot from anywhere. So a bit of an unfair advantage in that sense sometimes.
But playing now, do you ever come up against professionals in the WSL who you're confident of beating with every shot?
No, I wouldn't say professionals, not with every shot. There's some fantastic keepers that are great shot stoppers, and then there's others that have weaknesses. So you often, when you go to play a team, I always have a little look at the keeper's warm-up, and I sometimes say, look, right, she struggles to get down low. And I'll note that, or I'll say, look, she can't catch. You know, she struggles.
No,
can't catch, but as in, like, she's struggling to kind of come out and claim and things like that. So I always make notes in my head of what their weakness is. And again, it varies every game with the other. Sometimes, you know, that might just be them warming up, maybe not as great as they are, and they've actually pulled off fantastic saves. So there's mixed abilities, and that's, I think, on the pitch and off. So you can't, you know, suggest that all women's keepers are terrible, because there are honestly some fantastic keepers out there.
I also saw a really good thread on Twitter this week. It's saying it all depends on the lens you watch women's football at. We discussed this previously. There are people out there who are waiting to jump on any mistake a female goalkeeper makes. You know, they say, oh, I don't care about women's football. But as soon as one makes a mistake, they're there retweeting it, saying, look at this. So I think what Lily said is absolutely right. There are goalkeepers that make incredible saves, but you know they're not doing that 100% of the time throughout every single game. So I think, you know, we have to accept that not everyone's going to be flawless all the time, but also appreciate the good alongside recognising the bad.
Exactly that. And I think, like I said, for this season as well in the WSL, so Sophie Bagley has been, you know, she's won, and actually I think it's the PFA one that then is voted as well by your players. So I think, like you said, when people say, have you come up against people and they've been a terrible goalkeeper, you've also then got players that when they recognise a fantastic goalkeeper, and that comes from, you know, Sophie Bagley winning that award, that's from players saying, she's been fantastic, and she played at Bristol, and you know, Bristol, with all respect, you know, have had a great season for them, but they're not a Chelsea, they're not a Man City, they're not an Arsenal, so they are on the back foot a lot of the time. And some of the saves she has made, honestly, I think people should Google her, YouTube it, take a look at some of the saves, her kicking, free kicks, penalty. She's been unbelievable, and that for me shows the standard that some women's goalkeepers can get to. And for me, like I said, she's a really good outlook on how women's football could be.
Absolutely. So in summary, the goals can stay?
Yeah, of course they can.
Well, you are going to say that as a striker.
We'll save arguments, say, yeah, keep them that size. I don't mind.
You happy with that, Ella?
Yeah, I agree. I also absolutely agree that the debate should have been made. You know, the fact that women are smaller, it's worth a discussion, but ultimately, I think we can prove that they should stay the same.
Wonderful stuff. Well, coming up, we're going on safari because it's time to follow the lionesses.
This is Love Sport.
Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. And it's Cameroon next for the Lionesses. Are we confident?
I am, yeah. Like we said, we've got a lot to work on. But I think generally, looking at the list of teams in the round of 16, we could have had it a lot, lot worse. I think we just need to still work a little bit on our cohesion. We need to work out whatever the cause this is of our shakiness and looking tired at the back 70, 80 minutes, because the last thing we want are teams to properly take advantage of that. And maybe we've got away with it a little bit so far against Scotland and Japan, who really pushed on when they noticed that with us. But I think you've got to look at this game and say it's winnable, and it has to be winnable, because with England reaching the semi-final in the last two major tournaments, I think anything below reaching that stage will be a bit of a failure for the Lionesses this year. So I think we absolutely need to progress through this stage.
after seeing the winning goal for Cameroon the other night. I think I'm nervous. I'm very nervous. You know, what a finish. Calm, cool. She had, I think, two spare to her right, and she thought, no, I'm going to chop. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to open my hips and bend one in the corner. And fantastic quality for that. So we cannot underestimate them. And I really hope we don't do that. I really hope Phil goes into it and says to his players, please, you know, do not underestimate them. They're going to work tirelessly throughout. They're fit, they're athletic, they're fast. It's going to be tough. And like I said, they've proved they've got great quality. So for me, I genuinely am pretty nervous going into it.
Neville's been chopping and changing a lot with that team selection. Do you think he knows his best 11 yet?
I don't know. I don't know if we have a best 11 because we've got so much depth.
Everyone's
to our squad.
Got a best 11.
But I can't really fault Neville at the moment. And he said, I know what team I'm playing in those three games and I'm picking the 11 that works against the opposition we're facing. Okay, the performances haven't been 100% flawless when they ever are. But, you know, he's got the job done. He's got the results we needed. So it's really hard to call whether he does or not. I think with Cameroon, he'll go still fairly attacking, I think, without being too complacent. But I think, yeah, if we get through and end up in the semi-final stage against some of those top sides, I think he does. I like to think he has a plan worked out for facing those top sides.
Yeah, so like I said, with England, we have a fantastic squad. So he has the flexibility to trust and believe in all his players. And he said he's only picked his team because he believes and trusts them all. The thing for me is, like I said, it does depend on your opposition. And when you get to a later stage, so for example, England have played 4-3-3 and we've had kind of, you know, playing a lot down the wings. And actually Cameroon, you know, they're going to do their research. It's the last 16. They're not going to be naive to think we're not going to play, you know, wide and really attack from that. So, again, that's for Phil to work out, is playing, you know, down towards the corner flag and getting width. Is that going to work for Cameroon? Or does he look at their shape and think, actually, we need to set up different? Is it tactics that are going to change? And again, if you think and go into it tactically, your personnel does change. So he needs to work that out, and then it comes down to what personnel he wants in there. So for example, if he wants width, he's not going to be able to play for me, you know, Fran in the middle or maybe Stanway, because that's centrally. So like I said, are they then being outplayed? So it's going to be very interesting. I think he will, though, look into Cameroon again, pick his squad off that.
Is anyone in this England team undroppable?
For me, Jill Scott. She's been top class in the last three games, and she's one of those players, like we mentioned with Ellen White earlier, whose, you know, name isn't shouted about that often, but I think she's been brilliant. I think she's that powerhouse you want in midfield, that box-to-box midfielder, and she sort of resembles the tenacity that England can show. So I think, yeah, she's been very consistent, and yeah, I can't see Phil Neville dropping her.
Yeah, agreed. I think, like I said, you're not going to drop Jill, in my opinion. I think you need that core again, so that comes under, you're not going to drop your captain either, are you? So, Steph, for me, Ellen White, and that then is your core. You've got your striker, you've got your you know, in the base, in the midfield with Jill, and then you've got Steph, and then, like I said, there will be chopping and changing through that. So, for example, the other night we had Alex Greenwood sat out and Demi Stokes come in, and again, that's a decision for Phil to make, because before Demi Stokes got her injury, she was playing ahead of Alex Greenwood. So is he going to, you know, look into that and fitness and worry? As you said, Stanway the other night, I thought was fantastic also. But can he afford to drop Fran, who we all know can be, you know, incredible? So it's a mix. It's going to be very interesting to see the team. Do we go all out? Do we attack? Is he going to be cautious because it's last? Yeah. Is he going to think, right, tactically, play it safe to 60, and then we know we've got a better squad than Cameroon? Because honestly, you'd be surprised at how managers work, and I'm not in Phil's head, unfortunately. So can't tell you what he's going to do, but yeah, look forward to it.
And if England do get beyond Cameroon, who's up next?
If we get through, it will be Norway or Australia in the quarterfinal.
Who would you rather have?
Tough one. I think, personally, Australia. Mm-hmm. Because I think, not saying that they are just Sam Kerr, of course not, because to score goals, you need the service. And
if you stop
I know
her.
That as a player. But for me, I think if we stop her scoring and getting those opportunities, who is going to score? So, for example, if you think of it like that, even if Australia were all over us and constantly had the ball ever, who are they trying to find if we can outmark or, you know, close down her. So for me, I'd say that. Whereas with Norway, they've got a good team. They've got a good base. They've got Mari Mjelde, who's a fantastic, you know, leader from the back. And they've got players throughout that, you know, I think can score. So they're all very dangerous there. There's no one or two players. They're all, you know, a very good standard. So I would say Australia.
Is there a worry on the Australian front, Ella, that if we pay too much attention to Kerr, you can leave other players unmarked?
I mean, yeah, you've got the likes of Caitlin Ford, who is an extremely talented player. We know she can pop up and score goals. So, yeah, of course, like we can't be focusing too much on Sam, but obviously she's such a big threat that you need to close down. But, yeah, I couldn't make my mind up this one for ages, but I think after what Lily said, I think I would prefer to face Australia. We've seen they can be quite shaky at the back themselves, and as long as we stay solid, I think that's something that we could take advantage of.
And if you get beyond either Australia or Norway, I know we're into...
Not if, when.
Okay, when we get beyond them, we're into crystal ball territory here. But who are the Lionesses most likely to face?
I think it will be USA. But if I had the choice, again, I would say France. I'd prefer us to play France. I think we can cause them a problem at the back. And I think we can shut out, like you said, players like Le Samoa and players like that. So,
not Ronaldo.
Not her from a set piece.
She can't be stopped.
She can. Get Millie Bright on her. Millie Bright, fantastic.
Millie Bright's going to stop her from
She's
the penalty
smaller.
Spot, is she?
Oh, not the penalty spot, actually. Didn't think about that one. So. No, Val, we'll have to take refereeing for that game.
Are France the most frightening team in this?
No. Watching USA-Sweden last night, I fear playing the USA, and it's for the reason that we discussed, that we get tired, they don't seem to. I think they just play with, I don't know how to describe it, they just play with a lot more oomph than a lot of the other teams. They just play at a higher tempo, a higher intensity, and I think they will be able to wear us down. We haven't always seen that from France. We've seen little wobbles from them, and that's why I'd rather face France if it all plays out and that's the case in the semi-final.
If England win the World Cup because of a dodgy VAR penalty...
Not if, but when.
Sorry. When England win the World Cup, if it's because of a dodgy VAR penalty, would you take that?
A win's a win, Johnny, isn't it? You can't, you know, you can't. It's one of them, isn't it? There'd be controversy, but who's going to go back and say, you know, oh, we've done it because of VAR. A win's a win. You've won a World Cup. You're not going to argue it if it's in England. If it's the other way around, we will start a petition, probably. Everyone in England, that's how we work.
We want a second vote.
A second vote.
We want a second VAR. Bring it back.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think, okay, you know, there would be so much debate and controversy over it. But if that happened in the final, we've still got to a final. There's still, you know... You could argue that two teams that get to the final at that point are quite deserving of winning. So, yeah, but, you know, when you support the team, you know, your opinions change, don't they? It's so easy to take it.
Would you be willing to sacrifice a potential World Cup win for England to allow Wendy Renard to score 5 and win the Golden Boot?
So tempting, Johnny, so tempting. I'd love to see it, but I'm staying true to England, you know. I'd sack it off. Sorry, Renard.
And having watched, of course, all of these teams in action now in quite some detail, do either of you want to reassess who you suggested as your favourites, who you suggested as your dark horses?
Well, my dark horses were Scotland, so that's gone out the window.
Great start.
So that's good.
Let's not start on Scotland. I'm
thinking on Wednesday they were 3-0 up. I was like, yes, great. Predictions going well.
I called it before the game. Draw. Called it.
Yeah, no, I actually just mentioned mine. I said France were going to come out on top, but now I think USA.
Are you going to reassess?
No,
Lily?
I'm not. I'm going to stay true. England will pull it out of the bag.
Really?
I can feel it, yeah. But no, for me, I think as well, an underdog, and we've not actually spoke about them at all so far, Holland. For me, they've not been, as you know, they haven't been great. They actually haven't, which is why they've not been spoke about.
Weren't great against Cameroon.
No, they're not. But my point is, they've got the job done, and that's what Holland do well. They've done it well at the Euros. They have players that know their job, know their task. If they stick to it, I think they've got a very good coach and a manager who gives them their plan. You know, they know their job. And for me, they're very well disciplined in all areas. So I see them coming through as an underdog. If you look at their route as well, it's look at, you know, I think if they do win the next stage, then they meet, I guess off the top of my head, Germany if they get through. Mm. And then I think, again, that's winnable to get towards the final.
Are they a bit of an Australia in the sense that if you stop Medema, you've got a bit more luck?
No, they're not at all. They've got Van der Sanden, they've got Lika Martins, they've got Jackie Gronin in the midfield. They've got a great squad.
Daniel van der Donk, yeah, as well.
Their weakness is defending. That is their weakness. Going forward, again, they've not shown so many goals, but that's because they've been defending a lot of the time. But, like I said, if they stick to their jobs, which their defenders do, and they're disciplined, they, for me, dark horses.
Mm. I wish I was called Van der Donk.
Great name.
Great, great name.
Lots of people get confused when they're asking, like, Van der Meer, and I'm like, nope, that's not the one. It's
Andy Van der Meer.
Van der Meer.
He used to play for Everton about 400 years ago. Well, we've been on safari. We're backing the Lionesses. They're going to win it. But Wendy Renard is nailed on for the Golden Boot. Join us next week.
This is Love Sport.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at COTA.com/trip planner.